thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Happy holidays.
Here's John Williams.
This is my big thought. How are you?
This is John.
We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in. We're here until 3 o'clock.
Lord have mercy.
And then we do a show like this on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until noon. Where will you be on Saturday? If you walk by the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, you'll see me sitting in the Showcase Studio. I'm wearing a suit that I bought at Target for Pete McMurray. And then I bought one for me, too. I have not seen Pete today, but I trust he'll be wearing it. It's a suit that we described earlier in the week or a couple weeks ago. And
I keep waiting for the adjective. You keep pausing.
Well, I don't know how to describe
it. Do you
want
to call it, it looks obnoxious
like,
or no?
Oh, no, I think it's fabulous. Okay. I think it's Christmas wrapping paper is
right.
What it looks like. Red Christmas wrapping paper with green trees and white Santa faces and yellow stars. The suit is a tie, a jacket, and pants, all made of a kind of polyester that makes you think if you got too close to a flame, you might go up at any second. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, my God, that's Pete McMurray. And so I bought it for Pete, and I thought, well, I want one, too. So I bought another one. Yes, friends, I was able to purchase two brand-new suits with matching ties for under $130.
It's very festive.
Well, that's what it is, and you don't get to wear it every day. And today is the day of the company Christmas party. They're all doing that up on the seventh floor. They're doing a scavenger hunt. You know it's going to be a good day at work when somebody with a dolly is wheeling in cases of beer, wine, and Baileys. And that was happening for lunch earlier today, too. And then there's Cokes and Diet Cokes and waters. And real good Italian food up there. Bertolini's, thank you very much, out, but I think Midlothian way. And so they came in and are doing the food for us. By the way, shout out to Rosie and the Riveters, too, who were the house band for our Christmas spectacular from 10 a.m. until noon here on WGN. They will be performing tonight and under better circumstances at the House of Blues at 8 o'clock. Rosie and the Riveters, 8 o'clock tonight, House of Blues. Good for them. Good for you if you go to that show. Now, Steve Bertrand is now sort of sallied into the microphone position in the WGN radio newsroom.
Sort of, yeah.
Wearing a red sweater. Violetta and I will take a picture with you, Steve, and Elif, too. But Elif has a green sweater. Steve has a red sweater. I have this suit. And then Violetta has
lights.
She's wearing lights and very much a holiday ensemble. So, if we
do a picture, are you still going to be wearing that suit?
Yes, Steve. It's Christmas time. You know, I didn't know this about you, but you're a Grinch.
No, that's not true. I'm not a Grinch.
You are not as cheery as I thought you would be.
Well, I wouldn't wear one of those things.
Well, you don't have the option. He didn't buy it for you.
No, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know if you could wear one of these, Steve, because everybody said, well, how did you get that? I go, I went to Target. Well, what size are you? I go, it's medium, small, or large. It's a Target costume suit. But it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. On the show today, there is a piece in the Chicago Tribune today I thought was pretty interesting about brand loyalty or enthusiasm. There's a website based here in Chicago called Fansided. Our own Mark Carmen works there. He sort of administrates a, I believe, football page or blog for them. But Mark's in sports, and he does some of the sports writing and videos for Fansided. But what they've done is they said, take the top 250 brands. Which ones have the most fan enthusiasm? And by brands, I mean college teams, pro teams, TV shows, movies, singers, celebrities. The Kardashians are on the list. So you have all of these entities out there. Amazon is on the list. Disney is on the list. What, though, is the thing, the entity, the brand that has the greatest enthusiasm among its fan base? And number one on the list this year is not the Chicago Cubs, although you could see why it was the Cubs last year. This year it's Ohio State University, and I don't exactly know why, but they determined that Ohio State has the richest fandom. Number two is Game of Thrones, and I get that. What I don't get is number three, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That show he's on is awesome. And he's a good-looking guy, and he wants to be the next president of the United States or a United States senator. He's looking around going, I can do that. Whatever. But really, number three, Dwayne, we love you. But I don't see how you are bigger than Taylor Swift, for instance, who's number 10 on the list.
President Donald Trump on the list?
You know, it's funny you mention that, Violette. I hadn't thought about that until just now. He is not. And I know, you know, his approval ratings are low, so maybe that explains it. But among the 30...
But his enthusiasm is high.
I know, that's what I would think, you know, that among the people who do like him, the 30-whatever percent, they love him. They will walk through fire for this man. That should count for something. I mean, Pokemon is 33. You would think.
How does that keep coming up everywhere?
I don't know. This is the reminder on this list that it's a big world. For instance, Barcelona's soccer team is 32 on the list. Barcelona's soccer team is bigger than Tom Brady of the New England Patriots. And I guess that makes sense when you think about it being worldwide. Worldwide, Ohio State 1, Game of Thrones 2. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, maybe he's bigger internationally. Star Wars. Star Wars is number 4. I get that. Conor McGregor, fighting is a big deal. That's number 5. Netflix is 6. How do you compare apples and oranges? They do. Beyonce is 7. The Alabama Crimson Tide is 8. Maybe, you know, I was actually thinking about Alabama. I wonder if their Q score, their fan side, will go up now that they voted the way they did for U.S. Senator. Because if they had voted for Roy Moore in, I would have thought that it would have plummeted. Whatever metric you would use, that Alabama would go down and anything attendant to it. Maybe now they're going up. Pittsburgh Steelers are 9. Taylor Swift is 10. LeBron James is 11. And the first Chicago entry is your Chicago Cubs at number 12. That's the top 12. We'll talk more about that a little later on. I want to play a piece of audio for you. Maybe you've been in a situation like this before. I mean, you haven't been up for a federal judgeship, but you've maybe been in a situation where you know you're a little in over your head and you need to either fake it or just own the fact that you're in over your head and you don't know what we're all talking about here. So what do you do? Here's Matthew Spencer Peterson. He's a commissioner on the Federal Election Commission. He's an attorney who serves on the FEC. Donald Trump has nominated him to a federal judgeship. And so there he is sitting with other guys who are also being nominated in front of a Senate Judiciary panel that's asking them questions. Things that they should know if, in fact, they're going to get approval to be a federal judge.
Is he? I think I know where you're going here, but is he the guy whose wife is in the White House?
Don't know.
Okay.
But I'll tell you about some of the other nominees. Maybe one of these are the ones you're thinking of. Leonard Stephen Gratz to the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. Peterson's testimony followed the narrow confirmation of another one of the president's judicial nominees, Leonard Stephen Gratz, to the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, despite the fact that Gratz had received a not qualified rating from the American Bar Association. The White House said earlier this week that it would withdraw the nomination of Brent Talley, who was also unanimously rated by the ABA as not qualified. He was originally nominated to serve as a district judge in Alabama. The administration is also withdrawing the name of Jeff Metier, who was up for a seat on the district court in Texas following comments that have surfaced where he called transgender children, part of Satan's plan. That man was nominated by the president to be a federal judge. He will not be.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Talley, the guy you said Talley was the person I was thinking of, he, I think, had not ever argued a case in court and was the husband, of the White House counsel's chief of staff and hadn't disclosed that. So
the White House said earlier this week that it will withdraw Brett Talley's nomination, but they still put up Matthew Spencer Peterson. I don't know anything about being a federal judge, but I think it would help if you had been in court and knew court proceedings, blah, blah, blah. You were an attorney, had some federal experience. You know, you can imagine. The poor guy. And there he is on the Federal Election Commission, whatever that means. So maybe it would make sense that he be a judge. The man questioning him is a Republican senator from Alabama or Georgia. He's a Southern state Republican senator. Here he is asking the president's nominee, Matthew Peterson, some ballpark questions about being a federal judge.
Have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
Have you ever taken a deposition?
I was involved in taking depositions when I was associate at Wiley-Ryan when I first came out of law school.
How many depositions?
I would, I'd be struggling to.
But less than 10?
Yes.
Have you ever tried to taken a deposition by yourself?
I believe no.
Okay. Have you ever argued a motion in state court?
I have not.
Have you ever argued a motion in federal court?
No.
Well, as a trial judge, you're obviously going to have witnesses.
Yes.
Can you tell me what the Daubert standard is?
Senator Kennedy, I don't have that readily at my disposal, but I would be happy to take a closer look at that.
Do you know what a motion in limine is?
Yes, I haven't. My background is not in litigation as when I was replying to Chairman Grassley. I haven't had to, do a deep dive.
Just for the record, do you know what a motion in limine is?
I would probably not be able to give you a good definition right here at the table.
Do you know what the Younger abstention doctrine is?
I've heard of it, but I, again.
That, how about the Pullman abstention doctrine?
I heard
you. You'll all see that a lot in federal court.
Oh, come on. Those are gotcha questions. That is so unfair. He didn't know they were going to ask those ones. So he's going to sit in judgment of and know the procedure in court on the federal bench if he gets approved. That's who they put up.
He seems qualified.
Why don't we just make Lou Manfredini the judge?
Here's an idea.
What's that, Steve?
I was just Lou saying, I got an idea.
I know.
Make me a judge.
Really? Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I think, listen, why do I want to be king? Because I don't think a lot of this stuff is pretty hard. I mean, yeah, procedural, and you probably should have a good education, and I haven't done all of that. But, you know, you go, well, is he guilty or innocent? I can tell you this guy's guilty or innocent, or, yeah, you should pay him some $100,000. I mean, I think a lot of us think we could do that.
Judge Judy can do it.
Totally. I could do it in a commercial break. So let's go. Let's just, what is this limony stuff? Do I know some arcane procedure?
I actually kind of feel for the guy. You know, he went home. It's like, honey, I'm in line. I got it nominated for a judge, calling the parents and, you know.
And then he's like, wow, they're asking me questions. Yeah,
wait a minute. I totally feel that way, Steve, for that guy.
I mean,
this is the worst. This is a man being humiliated.
Who probably is a man of accomplishment.
Must be something if he's sitting there.
Of some accomplishment.
Yeah, but he is so in the wrong place.
Right.
And literally, it's just one of those things where if Donald Trump asked you to, would you? Bill Leff and Andrea Darlis were talking about, would you take the job as the White House press secretary this week? And you and I have talked about this as well as our friends, the Mincing Rascals, in our podcast before. And I think that, you know, I mean, we all have different opinions about that. But it's just really tough because you probably don't have a lot of respect for Donald Trump. But doggone it, that's a federal judgeship. Wow, that's a great gig. That's a great gig. You do want that job.
It's a job for life.
So do you hold your... And then, so that's one part of it. You want to be a Donald Trump nominee. Okay. But boy, what a great job. But then you think, yeah, but I'm not really super qualified. but if I can just get through this qualification process, then I'll have that job for life with benefits. It's a great gig.
And a uniform.
And I'll get to wear a robe and everything.
I just lost my train of thought.
So I don't know how you know, so it's very tempting to say yes, but then he's sitting there. And that's a Republican asking him those questions.
That was my point, exactly. That's I think he's from Louisiana, Kennedy. Republican senator taking on a Republican appointee like that.
John Kennedy, GOP Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana. Yeah.
Taking on maybe is too strong, but questioning.
Right. I mean, if that was a Democrat, imagine what it would be like. That's a Republican just saying, dude, help me out here. Have you ever, like, I wanted to literally hear him say, well, have you ever witnessed a trial? Because it sounds like all of the things you would do, he's never done. And he doesn't even know what the things are when he described them. But Aleph, find out what the limony thing is. the lemony snicket, whatever that thing was that he asked him, he said, the procedure of lemony, which, again, I think is a total gotcha question and is completely out of bounds. But look that up, and if you can get back to us on that, I'd like to know, because I'm going to throw my name in the ring. Elif, were you able to find out what the lemony snicket is or whatever that thing was?
An abstention doctrine. An abstention doctrine is any of several doctrines that a court of law in the United States of America may, or in some cases must, apply to refuse to hear a case if hearing the case would potentially intrude upon the powers of another court.
Oh. On a phone line is Ed Maloney. Ed, is that you? You're on WGN. How are you?
Yes, Jack, it's me. How are you?
How you been?
I'm doing fantastic. I've got up cold, but I'm doing fantastic.
You sound okay. You sound great. You're a judge now, right?
That's correct, yeah. Last time I saw you, right before you're moving to Minnesota, it's been about 5 years.
What seat do you have? What court are you in?
I'm in the west side of Chicago in a felony preliminary hearing room.
Is that a federal judgeship then, or is that state?
It's Cook County. It's Cook County.
Cook County. All right, well, do you know what? So did you hear the audio we just played, Judge, of the guy being queried about his credentials?
I did, and it was very scary. Very scary.
Wait, why do you say that?
Well, a motion in limine is not exactly what Ella told you. A motion in limine is probably one of the most often used motions in a jury trial. It's when one side or the other wants to introduce evidence that the other side feels is improper or the person that's going to testify is not qualified to give. So the example would be is if you're suing your doctor because your doctor committed malpractice on your eye operation, you've got to go out and hire an expert that's going to say the defendant doctor made a mistake. He made malpractice.
Right.
Well, your expert has to be an eye doctor. He can't be a foot doctor. So the defense will bring a motion in limine to bar your expert from testifying because he's not an expert in the field in which you're suing your doctor.
Well,
so it's used all the time. It's used by state's attorneys and criminal cases and everything. So
that seems pretty basic to me. You can't, you know, have somebody outside their expertise. Or at least the other side ought to be able to petition that person is not a valid witness. That sounds pretty nuts and bolts to me.
It is. Like I said, it's one of the most often used motions. State's attorneys will use it. They've got a witness that they don't know if the judge will allow in. You can bring in a motion in limine. They have a hearing. The judge can say, this person's qualified. I'm going to let this person testify.
How do you spell that? L-I-M-I-T-Y, like limity?
No, it's L-I-M-I-N-E.
Limine. Limine. What are you, a judge? You know these things, huh?
No. I learned it all from listening to you years ago.
Okay, so
without any evidence, would you be inclined to convict John or acquit him?
If I walked in with this suit I have on today, I don't think I'd get a fair trial. Okay, so now asked about that basic principle of law here in these United States of flippin' America, the Trump nominee for a federal judgeship had this response.
How about the Pullman abstention doctrine?
I heard
you'll all see that a lot in federal court.
And do you have his answer, Elif, or it stops there? Well, anyway,
Just a second.
No, it's okay. But he didn't have much to say about that. He said he could get back to you on that, as though the senator didn't know either. What an embarrassing moment for everybody there. Yeah. All right.
At least the one guy did withdraw. I'm glad to hear that. The Katie guy that he left.
Yeah.
This guy just had on. It's pretty scary that these people can be there for life and render decisions that have a lot of serious effects on people. So anyway, good to hear you, John.
Hey, nice to hear you. Yeah, thank you, Judge. I appreciate it. Ed Maloney on the line. Yeah, thanks for calling in.
I would probably not be able to give you a good definition right here at the table.
He doesn't know. You're on the air. Hi, Leslie. Who's that with you there?
Hello, I'm David.
Hi, David. Hi, Leslie. And why are you standing there? What did you want to tell me?
I want to tell you that my parents are going on the cruise with you in April, and they're so excited.
We will have a lot of fun. We really do. That's the Kelly Cruises, right, that we're doing in the Mediterranean.
Mediterranean, yeah.
Oh, nice. So who am I traveling with? What is their name?
Marilyn and Arnie K.
Marilyn and Arnie K. We can't wait to meet you. Woo!
Great.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Yeah, that'll be fun. KellyCruises.com. Discount still available. Shipboard credit and great rates. Visit KellyCruises.com. This is the time of year when CD1 price cleaners can save you a lot of money, too, by the way. Last year, A research firm did a study in Chicagoland and found that about 58%, it costs 58% less to have your garments dry cleaned at CD1 Price Cleaners across all seasons. If you say, well, just tell me about the cold winter months when I've got sweaters and coats, you save even more. The average dry cleaner charges about $5 to have a sweater cleaned. It's $3.29 at CD1 Price Cleaners. The average dry cleaner around here charges over $15 to get a coat cleaned. At CD1 Price Cleaners, it's $3.29. It's one price at CD1 Price Cleaners. Think about how much money you're going to save by switching to CD1 Price Cleaners. Same-day service is always free. By the way, they'll clean your winter boots. Don't forget, grab a complimentary cup of gourmet coffee when you head out the door. I always do. 34 Chicagoland locations. Tell them John Williams said hi.
Do you know what a motion in limine is?
Yes, I haven't. My background is not in litigation replying to Chairman Grassley. Mm. I haven't had to, do a deep dive.
Just for the record, do you know what a motion in limine is?
I've never even heard of it.
I would probably not be able to give you a good definition right here at the table.
That's a gotcha question!
Do you know what the younger abstention doctrine is?
I've heard of it, but
how about the Pullman abstention doctrine?
So unfair.
You'll all see that a lot.
Oh, maybe you're not. What do you know, you bum? Who are you, a United States senator, asking me, a man who wants to sit on the federal bench for life? For life? Well, I really haven't done a deep dive into that lemony snickety thing you got there, Mr. Senator.
Isn't he writing adult books now?
Is he with Lemony Hoobily Wuddily? Eh? Really, maybe his wife should have said, "Hon, listen, you're on the Federal Election Commission and you're an attorney. And we have a nice life. And being a judge would be cool, but you're not really ready to be a judge."
But I can Google everything.
Yeah, but I'll just Google just to have people haven't done a deep dive on that. The judge called in a minute ago and said, no, that's kind of what we do every day. You kind of need that one. So I'm just going to, I think I'll try out for the NBA instead.
So I wonder if that has ever happened or how often that happens.
Not exactly qualified for that either. What
you
do you
know,
mean?
Thanks for the nomination, but I just don't think I'm the guy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, really, maybe he would have, are you kidding me? Really, I got to know that stuff? Hey, guys, listen, my bad. I am so sorry to take your time. I am just going to recuse myself, and he walks out of the hearing.
But I mean, even before, like, you get the call from the White House, the Justice Department, or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're going to nominate you for a federal judgeship or judicial post. Yeah, I'm not up to that.
Yeah, really. I mean,
I bet that's never happened.
Well, I can only relate to it this way. Once upon a time, I was asked to audition for a part at a big-time radio station when I was very young and still unqualified, and I knew I had no business. And I was mortified that they might actually give me the job, but I sent in my demo tape, and part of me was going, oh, please don't offer me the job. Please don't offer me the job because I can't do the job. Fortunately for America, I did not get the job, in part because I sounded like this. My nephew David, who's listening to us in another state, just sent me a text. Hey, Uncle John, a motion in limine is referring to a common court motion to request testimony to be excluded from a trial, according to this article. Evidently, David has done a deep dive and knows about the limine stuff. So, I don't know if you saw this in your Chicago Tribune today. If you don't already, you should subscribe to a newspaper. But FanSided is a site based here in Chicago. They got employees across the country. Our own Mark Carmen works well for them in the sports side. And they had a list of the things that fans are most passionate about. Not just sports fans, but anything. For instance, the top three we mentioned at the beginning of the show were the Ohio State Buckeyes, number one fan support, Game of Thrones, number two, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, number three. I mean, if you could be a fan of anything, how deep would the passion go here in America, or maybe the world? Patrick Allen is on a phone line, and he is the vice president of, is it content? Is that what you do over there, Patrick? How are you?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Was that a fair description of you guys and what this is all about?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a network of fan-powered sports and entertainment blogs. Been around since 2007, and Yeah, the Fandom 250 is kind of our end-of-year celebration of fandoms, and we take on the monumental and probably impossible task of trying to rank what we think the top 250 fan bases are for that year at any given time. So it's a little bit of a challenge. It's a heck of a lot of fun. It sparks a lot of debate. And this is our second year doing it.
Yeah, because you got a lot of this wrong. I'll be straight up with you. This is not right, sir.
Welcome to our editorial meetings. Believe me, the discussions we have, you know, we hear folks saying once we release the list are the same discussions and arguments that we have throughout the course of the year.
Oh, yeah, I love it for that reason. Although my understanding is that there's not a sort of algorithm that automatically aggregates this. You use some, I presume, data from social media platforms, but it's somewhat subjective among you and your staff. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a formula, and we have information that we collect from our 300-plus fan-powered blogs. But, you know, we certainly toyed with the idea of trying to create an algorithm, but to us that seems super boring. You can't really measure passion, and that really is what fandom comes down to. So, you know, that's a big part of putting this list together every year. So we certainly use hard facts and data, and not only from social media, we look at how much a potential fandom could be worth, how long has it been around, and then we want the list to change every year, and so we place a lot of emphasis on buzz as well. But no, there's not some sort of fan-sided supercomputer that we plug this all into and it spits it out, because how could a computer possibly measure passion?
You mentioned buzz, and you're right, because a million tweets about something or mentions, say, on Instagram doesn't necessarily mean that those people love it as much as maybe a smaller population does something that they're very passionate about. So I get that. So the Cubs go from 1 to 12. We were number 1 last year. That made sense. And 12 feels about right to me. But why are the Ohio State Buckeyes number 1 this year?
Well, you know, Ohio State was number 8 for us last year. This is one of the biggest college football programs in the country. 538 did a study a few years ago that said that they had the most fans of any college football team. So we thought very highly of them last year, having them in our top 10, and continued to follow them closely this year. It was a big year for them. They had a ton of buzz. They were up and down in the college conversation all year. Every time it looked like they were left for dead, they came back. Their fans kept supporting them. They won the Big Ten. We went down to Ohio State and were actually on hand. We went down to interview fans for the Penn State game, and our editors were just completely blown away by these people. It was cold, it was sleeting in the morning. They were out there at the crack of dawn tailgating. They rushed the field. It really was an electric atmosphere, unlike anything a lot of our editors had ever seen. That certainly went a long way towards impressing us and towards them grabbing the top spot this year.
Well, if you asked me to just randomly say, start throwing out the names of college football and basketball programs, I presume we're principally talking about where the fans are deep, passionate and broad, I would say Ohio State. I would say Michigan. I would say Notre Dame. I would say Duke, even though that's a very small school, but Lord, those Dukies are nuts and they're known for that. And then I would do a lot of SEC schools, right? Like Alabama and Auburn and stuff like that. What do you make of my thinking so far?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, we really feel like a lot of our discussions this year, we talked about how incredible we think the college football and college basketball in particular fan bases are. There's something a little bit different when you go to a college game than when you go to a pro sports game. And some of the best compliments that pro fans can get is that their tailgate has a college-like atmosphere. So we really do think college football fans in particular and college basketball fans are some of the most passionate out there.
Yeah.
And absolutely. You know, Ohio State had 12 million people watch the Big Ten championship game versus Wisconsin. They had four more games than any other team. Coach Urban Meyer actually tweeted this out today. More games than any other team that were in the top rated of college football. They had 10 million watch their game against Michigan. $9 million watch their game against Penn State, and $8 million watch their game against Oklahoma. So,
well, let's do this.
Fans draw.
So I have. So if you said okay, and it can be entertainers, it can be movies, TV shows, it can be kind of anything for fan passion among sports teams that make the list. The Ohio State Buckeyes are one. Then you need to go down to maybe Conor McGregor, the fighter, is number five. Alabama Crimson Tide. Okay, I'm right about that. Number eight. Pittsburgh Steelers 9. LeBron James 11, Cubs 12, Dallas Cowboys 13, Pittsburgh Penguins, they won the Stanley Cup, but really, the Pittsburgh Penguins, one, it's hockey, two, it's Pittsburgh.
Well, have you ever been to Pittsburgh?
Never. Well, yes, I've been to Pittsburgh. I went to a wedding there. I've never been to a Penguins game.
Those fans are absolutely out of their minds. It's an incredible sports town. Penguins fans, that franchise has won so many Stanley Cups, and they live and die with that franchise.
Okay, let me throw this at you. The Lakers are 18, the Yankees are 20, but the Packers are 23. That sounds fair. NASCAR as a brand is 24, but Real Madrid is 28, and that's the first soccer team to crack the list. I wonder if it's hard for us to really appreciate that in this country. We just don't get soccer. We don't really understand the fandom of it, do we? I don't.
No, it's tough, and frankly, some of those soccer teams are if we really have tried to take the list and give it a U.S. slant. That's where most of our audience is, but we want to recognize some of these soccer teams, and you could easily pop one of those Real Madrid teams. You can pop them right up in the top 10 if you wanted to, because their fans are worldwide.
Yeah.
There's millions upon millions of them, and incredibly passionate.
Okay, so let me do this. Here's the quiz for you. It's 149 on WGN. We're talking to Patrick Allen. He is over at he is the vice president of content and strategy at FanSided. Mark Harmon works over there. You've seen and read his stuff over there before. Let's take a quick break and come back. When we do, in the top 100, there are five Chicago-centric teams, persons, or things. Shows, movies, whatever. You get it. What are the five things in Chicago where the fan base is so deep and passionate that they crack the top 100? You think you know? In a minute on WGN. We're talking about fandom. Patrick Allen is the vice president of content and strategy at FanSided. You may have seen that little piece in the Tribune today where they were talking about this site, and I knew a little bit about it. Patrick's telling us more about how they do, what they do, and who made the list. Hey, Steve, all right, 100? There's 250, but if you look at the top 100, what entities from Chicago make it into the list?
Cubs.
One.
Chance the Rapper.
Ding, 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 number 98 of 100.
Oh, really, 98. Okay, that's two. Oak Brook Mall.
Oak Brook Mall is number five on the list.
It's not going to be the Bears or the Bulls. At Blackhawks, I guess.
Blackhawks are on the list,
which
is interesting, Patrick, because here again, that's the NHL. But Blackhawks fans, I would say, are, along with White Sox fans, Chicago's most devoted. And Blackhawks fans have had more success and maybe are more of a national brand now than the White Sox. So I'm glad the Blackhawks made the top 100.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to look at it and say, oh, well, hockey, it's not that big. Same thing with the Pittsburgh Penguins. But again, we're measuring passion here as well. So, if you look at how many hockey fandoms made it on the list, I think proportionately it sort of lines up with the popularity of, at least on the sports side in the U.S. But, there's no accounting for passion, and Blackhawks fans are certainly up there. Chicago fans in general. Chicago came in behind only New York City with, I believe, four sports teams on
the list.
If you want to throw, Notre Dame in there, I don't know if you do, but that counts for a number five.
Well, so if you walk north, Steve, from the Blackhawks at 77, Instagram is 74. In a way, I think that should be higher if you're going to allow Instagram in there, because lordy, people love their Instagram. 72 is the St. Louis Cardinals. 70 is Ed Sheeran. what an odd list. And then 67 is a TV show with some Chicago scenes, and that's TV's Empire. But you do have a bunch of Chicago-based medical and crime and police shows right now, too, don't you?
Yeah, what we call them, the Chicago shows. And that's all in the same world, Chicago Med, Chicago Fire. And those shows cross over with one another. And that's a fandom we saw kind of coming up. And we launched a blog for that, for all of those shows and a Facebook page. It was one of the fastest growing blogs in the history of our company.
Yeah.
One of the fastest growing Facebook pages we've ever seen.
So Blackhawks are 77, TV's Empire is 67. Those are two. Chance the Rapper, Steve Guest is number three. The Cubs are number 12 on the list. That would be four. And the other Chicago-based entity that is on your list of the 100 is one Kanye West, number 38. Kanye is a divisive character. Those of us who love him and are almost always willing to forgive him. Not always, but a lot. And then some people just don't get him. But I think you've got that right. I think Kanye has to be on that list. One thing before I let you go. The president is not. Do you have any explanation for that?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, last year we did include politics on the list. Donald Trump was, I don't recall the exact number, he was highly up there as were the Obamas. And as we were debating the list this year, you know, as I said earlier, we really feel like this is a celebration of fandoms, which we think is a really positive and healthy thing for people to engage and form communities around things that they love. And frankly, we just felt that the political environment has grown so toxic and divisive that it really, we couldn't even qualify it as a fandom anymore. It was just so negative. And we decided to remove it from the list.
It may be the right choice, which is a sad commentary, but why pollute something that's fun with everybody's hostility? Patrick Allen is the Vice President of Content and Strategy over at Fansided. Hey, let's stay in touch. It's nice to meet you. Say hi to my friend Mark Carmen, and thanks for joining us.
Will do. You take care over there.
How about that? Fansided.com, FANSIDED.com.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Manuka.
Here's John Williams.
Manuka. Mm-mm. 208. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Appreciate you tuning in. We're here till 3. Listen for Ocon and Anna DeVlantis after that. They've got a really good radio show, which is good for us because we're a radio station. On Saturdays, I'm on from 10 a.m. until noon. Last note about the previous conversation about Fansided. Hey, John, where does Harry Potter rank in fandom? It is 27 on the list, 26 on the list. Marvel Comics are 27. Harry Potter's fan base ranks 26. Serena Williams, 25. NASCAR, 24. The Packers, 23. Disney, 22. Colin Kaepernick, 21. The Yankees and Wonder Woman get you up to number 19. What a bizarre list. And then there's this. Remember, our guest a moment ago said that he did not include politicians. Donald Trump is not on the list, nor are the Obamas, say, because he felt that politics were so toxic. This is a fun, positive list, and he doesn't want to bring it down by the bickering that a list of politicians would create. This texter said, John, politics is not toxic and divisive unless you're insane, dirt-worshipping, tree-hugging liberal, and create your own division and toximity by denial of the truth. I think that person is being sarcastic. That is why politics,
I don't think they are.
Are not on the, I know. Via my first, I thought, oh my God, this is a horrible person. And then but now I'm thinking that's a really funny person who's swimming with us. They get it, and that's just them being funny. That's them saying, see, this is what happens.
Right.
But maybe that's giving them too much.
No, let's give them the credit. We have great listeners.
We do. We appreciate your coming to our store. Outlander is number 137 on the list of the top 100.
You're an Outlander guy, aren't you?
I am. That is the damn sexiest sexual show, as well as just a great adventure story.
I've wanted to watch it. I've only seen the previews, but it looks like my cup of tea.
Number 2, Game of Thrones. Number 15, Walking Dead. How that's on there, I don't know. Walking Dead is the same episode every single night. Some of those people need to have been killed off a long time ago. I don't know how that show lost its way, but I think it's unwatchable. It's 15th on the list, and Outlander's 137.
I'm sorry, which show, John?
That would be
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead.
Most of these, though, are hit or miss. Either you're a huge fan, or you've never...
Yeah, you've never put, and maybe that's the essence of the list then, Violetta. That is, huge fan. Like, some people aren't in it, but if you are, you are really with the program. Heather Long joins us again on WGN Radio. She's helped us understand things before. Heather, do you think The Walking Dead is all that in a can of chips or bag of chips? What do you think?
Oh, boy, you're hitting me with a hard one at the top
here. That's not why I called. That's not why. You don't watch that. What is your go-to show?
I do recommend Outlander. I can say I've read the books and seen that show. It's fabulous.
It's pretty hot, isn't it?
That's a good way to describe it.
I mean, really, if you said, forget sex scenes, but if you just said, what's the most passionate physical relationship, enduring passionate physical relationship that you've seen depicted on television, I would put those two, good looking, and she traveled through time for him, for crying out loud. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Exactly. Everyone wants someone who looks at them like he looks at her.
That's... Right. Right. And then, whew. Well, that's all we asked, called you for, Heather. Thanks for coming on today.
I can talk about hot actors and a hot economy. How about that?
Heather Long is the economics correspondent at the Washington Post. Here's my problem, Heather. Every list I've seen, everybody says this tax plan is bad because we're going to acquire too much debt. And maybe you can talk about that. But I've also heard it pitched to us as, oh, it's the rich getting richer and the middle Americans get screwed. But when I type in various income and children, it seems to me like everybody is going to save if this tax plan passes, at least in the short run. Can you comment a little bit on that?
Sure, that's right. They have made a number of changes, and at this point, the overwhelming majority of Americans will pay less in taxes next year and the year after. Now, it varies. The president is fond of saying people will get almost a $2,000 tax cut. That's not going to be true for everybody. You know, some folks will just get a few hundred back, but hey, that's not nothing. So you're right. Most people will get a tax cut. You know, on the big picture, America has three big economic problems. And number one, our growth has been pretty sluggish since that Great Recession really knocked the wind out of us. Number two, we got horrible inequality in this country back to 1920s levels with the rich getting richer and everybody else stagnating. And number three, we've got a big debt. You know, $20 trillion is not a small number, and it's going to get uglier even without this tax bill in the next 10 years as more baby boomers retire. So those are three big problems. And when you look at this bill, the Republican argument is this is going to juice growth so much that we're going to solve all those problems. But when you talk to almost any independent analyst and economists and tax experts, and even a good number of CEOs will tell you behind closed doors, this is probably only going to juice growth for a year or two and then not do a whole lot. We're going to end up with higher debt. And the reality is it's going to drive inequality even bigger.
Is this
so in that sense, yeah, it doesn't look so good.
Well, my understanding is that the only way it works is if these companies that enjoy fewer taxes and therefore have more profits put it back into the economy. They build more, they pay more, they don't save more. Is that true?
And they have to do that for year after year after year. So again, a lot of people are saying, yeah, they'll probably do a little bit more next year. We're already seeing some pickup the last quarter or two as they anticipate that tax cut becoming a reality next year. But are they really going to do this every year for the next 10 years?
Yeah.
That's where the high skepticism comes in.
And yet, and I've also heard that most Americans don't favor this. And I think most Americans don't understand this, number one. And that if you pitched it to them, as the president did on Twitter yesterday, I mean, I follow him and I'm also on a text chain. And they sent out a thing yesterday saying, type in your state. I did. And then there's the phone number of my senators. And it says, tell Tammy Duckworth or Dick Durbin that you want $2,000. And then they have a bunch of categories that indicate how you could spend $2,000, save for college, payoff bills, great Christmas. And so it's like, hey, do you want $2,000? Click here. Call your senator and tell them you want $2,000. That's how they're pitching it. And I could see how that would be very compelling, how people don't understand macroeconomics, does anybody, but they do understand $2,000. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. Hey, I was playing around that calculator, too, and thinking, it looks not too bad for me next year and my family members, too. You know, again, the problem is, but when you start to ask people questions like, should the wealthy get a tax cut? They usually say no. Or should corporations get a massive tax cut, as they will in this bill? They usually say, not so sure. Or if you ask people, do you think your kids and grandkids should be saddled with a $30 trillion debt? They say, no, I don't think so. So again, you know, it just depends how you ask the questions. Yes, everybody, it's like, you know, everybody likes to eat the cookies at Christmas time and the holidays, but nobody likes to do the January-February workout routine, and that's kind of a good analogy for this bill.
What's this child tax credit Marco Rubio controversy all about?
I mean, to make a long story short, he made a good point. The reality is the president likes to talk about how this plan would double the child tax credit from $1,000 to $2,000. And hey, that's great. But you can only, it's very difficult to take advantage of that for families who are part of what's known as the working poor. So these are folks earning 20-some thousand or the low $30,000 a year. You know, the waitresses of the world, the home health care nurses. And the problem is they don't earn enough money in order to have a tax credit be very useful to them. And so when this bill was initially crafted, they allowed lots of families, you know, $100,000 and more families to take advantage of the child tax credit. But on the low end, they didn't make more of the child tax credit refundable. So meaning families actually get money back from the government if they have kids and they are working. So what Marco Rubio was saying was, hey, this isn't fair. We can't be giving all these tax cuts to the wealthy and big businesses and then not, you know, basically screwing or not giving a lot to the working class. So, you know, he really held out, and what they ended up doing is going from a refundable credit of around $1,100 up to $1,400. So, again, some of those working class families are going to get a couple hundred dollars now. That's not nothing. That's a lot to them.
I talked to some salespeople today, and they said they keep track of their gas, their clothes, their transportation costs, all of the things relevant to their job that they're able to deduct. Their understanding is that with this bill, they will lose the deductibility of a lot of those business expenses. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. And I think that's probably the biggest hit to the middle class in this bill. That's going to survive, you know, that will end up in it. They cleaned up a lot of the issues that were really going to ding the middle class, like the student loan deduction is going to remain, and the medical deduction for people who are with Alzheimer's or in nursing homes. But yeah, you're right. This is a big one. It affects a lot of people you don't even think about. So I was talking to some folks in the National Symphony Orchestra over the weekend. They said, you know, we travel all the time for our jobs, and we have to buy new instruments every year. At the moment, we can deduct, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in expenses from our taxes. We won't be able to do that now. So they're really worried. Actors are really worried. There's a whole network in this country of traveling nurses because we don't have enough nurses in certain parts of the country and doctors. And so people will travel around the country and spend 13 weeks working, you know, one in Texas and then in California and then in Alaska. And again, same thing. They can no longer deduct those expenses for travel and for housing when they're on the road. So this could really shake up a lot of industries.
But won't the standard deduction go up, and will that replace essentially those lost itemized deductions?
For a lot of people, you know, look, it's a good deal that we're seeing a bigger standard deduction. But the reality is the standard deduction compensates for the fact, the higher standard deduction in this plan compensates for the fact that we're losing something called the personal deduction, and a lot of people won't be able to deduct as much on their state and local property taxes. So, you know, people who are doing even more deductions than that, like for business expenses or those folks who are doing medical expenses, you know, they would feel, will feel the most heat under this plan.
Heather Long's an economics writer for The Washington Post. I'll let you go here, Heather, but I've been Googling Trump tax calculators this week, and some of them are more comprehensive than others. Does WAPO have one, and do you like it? Would that help me kind of get a sense of where I would be if it were to pass right now?
We do have one, but I have to say, and try to be always fair as possible, I think the best one right now is actually over at the Wall Street Journal. So as much as it pains me to say that, they did a great job. They partnered with the University of Pennsylvania, and I highly encourage people. It's very simple, 10 factors. You can do it in about 30 seconds.
You guys have one, too. And by the way, I'm a big fan of newspaper reporters these days. I tweet every week or so. If you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper. Keep doing what you do, Heather, and please come on with us again sometime soon.
Thank you. Keep thinking how you're going to spend that tax savings.
$2,000! Hooray! Thanks, Heather. Heather Long is an economics correspondent at Washington Post. On Fridays, we close the week and start your weekend about this time, giving you a chance to tell us some good news in your world. We will do that in just a minute. Before we do, we like to give you some fun things to do in the Chicago area, and we always sort of cobble together a little list of ours, but we've always noticed that the Tribune does such a good job, let's just steal from them. And the Take 10's Jessica Rohde is in our studio. She's an arts and entertainment writer that compiles that. Hey, Jessica, how are you? Welcome to the studio.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Well done.
Thank you.
How long have you been putting the list together each week?
I took over Take 10 around February of this year.
So you're like me, looking around, going, okay, what's a fun thing to do?
Yeah.
Based in Chicago. Every weekend,
my inbox gets bombarded, and then I pick what I think is the best of the best and try to have a little bit of something for everyone.
Okay, here's some things on my list. Millennium Park, the holiday sing at 6 o'clock at the Bean. Love that. Morton Arboretum's holiday tree lights every day, 4:30 to 9:30. Tickets at mortonarb.org. It's a kaleidoscope of a winter wonderland of 50 acres of LED-lit trees. And you can't get into Lincoln Park anyway, so who are we kidding? Go to Morton Arboretum's Holiday Tree Lights. The Ultimate Holiday Movie Series at the Lagunitas Brewing Company tonight at 7 o'clock, Sunday at 2 and 5. They have a list of holiday movies that you can see there online. What do you like this weekend?
I am very excited about the holiday skate weekend at Chicago Athletic Association. For the rest of the year, they have holiday pop-up bars and different activities throughout the entire hotel. But the skate weekend is fun because it's cold outside, and if you're horrible at ice skating, you can stay inside and roller skate and still dress up and hear all the Christmas classics.
Where is this?
At the Chicago Athletic Association, so 12 South Michigan Avenue.
Got it.
Skate rental is $5. You can bring your own. It's $20 and you're there all night. They have food and drinks. It's really fun. Also the Sad House, it's a local drag company. They have a drag extravaganza for Christmas. Wanda Scrooge is coming out, much like Ebenezer Scrooge. She is not one for the holidays, but she has entered a pageant, and in order to win, she needs to find her holiday spirit. So she has a Christmas guardian angel come, and Santa himself is going to help her find her spirit so she can slay the competition, as one does.
Got it.
In many a drag show. And
I don't know how the drag shows go, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, we need to have a little something for everyone, you know. We're doing the worst. And that is at G-Man Tavern on Friday and Saturday night. And then local bands, Dead, Deeper, and Gliders are playing a show tonight at Empty Bottle. As far as the local rock scene goes, I know a lot of people look to the Chicago music scene for its hip hop, which is really, really exciting, but there is other stuff out there. And, they're going to be bringing like some psychedelic pop and garage rock to Empty Bottle tonight. And it's a vinyl album release show, so everyone can pick up some goodies there too.
You also have on your list the Ugly Sweater Run.
Ugly Sweater Run at Soldier Field.
So how does that work?
You show up in your ugliest knit. That seems to be the new favorite holiday tradition for everyone. It's a walk run. It's a 5K. So it's about, what is that, 3 miles?
5K is 3.1 or 2.6. It's right around there.
Yeah, around there.
About 3 miles.
It's a walk and run. The whole family, at the end, they're giving out awards, best pet attire, so you can bring your pup or your cat or whatever type of pet you have that would want to be out there. And you get a free Ugly Sweater Run hat.
It's 9 a.m. Well. Saturday at the Field Museum. It just seems like every
weekend. At Soldier
weekend,
Field.
Oh, did I say the Field Museum? It's Soldier Field.
Yes.
Yeah. It seems like every weekend there's some sort of crazy, bizarre run or walk in the city. And I'm often driving by them, and like 10,000 people go by me, and I go, now, what was that?
Yeah, you're like surprised by these street closures, and then all of a sudden there's just like a mass of people.
But there's also, but it's also reminded me, like, wow, there's stuff going on I don't know about, but everybody's tapped into me, it feels like, because It's like, how did all these people know there was a run along the lake or whatever?
Yeah.
Or an ugly sweater run. Now, is that a benefit for somebody or you just go and do it, the ugly sweater
No,
run?
You can just go and do it.
I kind of like that even better. Okay, $45 yeah.
You can
free
go day of and register. Mm-hmm.
$45? I got to pay $45 to run on this thing?
That, I mean, it is cheaper than a gym membership, at least in some places. I know some gym memberships can get kind of extreme.
Okay, the details are in the Chicago Tribune today. Give me one more thing you want to recommend to our listeners.
Polar Adventure Days at Northerly Island. You can get up close and personal with Siberian Huskies, arts and crafts, very winter themed, and free hot chocolate for the first 500 people. So definitely take advantage of it while the kids are still on winter break.
Northerly Island, that one's free. That's noon on Saturday.
Do you have to be a kid to play with the Siberian Huskies?
Do you have to be a kid to play with the Siberian Huskies?
Absolutely not.
Violetta, you're in.
All ages.
All right, thanks for coming in. Let's do this again, Jesse. I appreciate what you do in the Tribune. You can read it online. You can read it in print. And you can hear her on Fridays visiting with us, maybe after the first of the year, huh?
Yes.
Thanks for helping us
out
today.
Thanks so much, John.
You betcha. I've got a couple open phone lines, 312-981-7200. If you've got a bright side that you want to share, we want to hear it or read it. Coming up next.
Hi, John.
You ready to read the text?
I am ready to read.
Here we go. Let's do it.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle.
Get ready. Here we go.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
Sing at home if you know the words.
And
always.
Always look on the bright side of
life. On Fridays, we ask you to call in, tell us some good news, why you are smiling. Our Bright Side today is sponsored by the Joint Relief Institute. What's some good news in your world? You can text to 312-981-7200 or call that number.
Jolly rotten.
Ladies go first. Violetta Podramatic, WGN Radio of Podramatic. Is it Podramatic or Podramatic, Violetta?
It's definitely not problematic.
Silly chumps.
What's your bright side? Why are you smiling?
I'm finally in the holiday spirit. I think WGN Spectacular today really put me, I'm ready for Christmas.
That's funny because it took Steve out of the holiday spirit.
That's not true.
What's your bright side, Steve?
Emma got home last night. Noah is on the road. Everyone's going to be getting together tonight and we can start arguing over what movie to watch on Christmas Eve.
For life is quite absurd.
My bright side, we're doing holiday. Brenda baked some cookies. We're icing and decorating them tonight. The kids will be there. My niece, Lauren, will be there. And we're going to have a terrific time making cookies, watching movies tonight. How about you, Marsh? What's your good news?
Okay, I have two, if that's okay.
Okay.
Actually, I took over the WGN Insta story today.
Yes,
so
you were. You did.
It was a takeover by Marsha herself, so check it out. And also, I met a new friend over at the Gwynn Hotel, Frank Giametta.
Happy holidays, Frank. Welcome to the studio.
Sir.
We're doing good. Hey, Elif, by the way, do you have a bright side as well? Are you going to share one piece of good news before we take some calls?
Yes. Finally, new windows in my apartment.
Really? I knew you had an issue. They got you new windows in your apartment?
It only took 90 days, John.
That's not bad.
I'm being sarcastic, though.
That's pretty good.
Just in time for the cold.
Yeah, I think so new windows for Elif. Woohoo! All right, let's talk to Tracy. Take up some phone lines. Tracy, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
I am 7 months cancer-free. I have hair growing, and I have great new boobs done, and I'm healthy.
I believe Judy Pilek used to say stuff like that, right, Judy?
And let me tell you, they're still not sagging. 10 years later, 10 years.
No bra or anything.
Woo, baby, we are hot.
So I suspect you look great, you sound great. Tracy, good news. Thanks for sharing that.
Thanks, John. Have a good Friday.
Always. I don't think we get to talk like that in this new world anymore,
and
Judy.
And your hair grew back, too, didn't it, John?
I did shave mine, and I have my hair, too. By the way, our first caller, even though we took that one call first, our first caller, I think, is Lori. Hey, Lori, are you there?
Yes, I am, John.
$100 gift card for you to MJ Miller and Company. What's your bright side?
Wow. My bright side is with lots of prayers from a lot of special people, my mother's kidney number got better instead of worse.
Amen to that, girl. I'm happy to hear the news.
I love it. Thank you, John.
Read some for us, Marsh. What are we reading on our text line?
Yeah, this is from area code 630. Teresa, hi, John. I finished my health care government application, and I did all this while listening to your broadcast online and knitting a sweater.
And knitting a sweater. Wow. Give me another one. You got another bright side?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. We are coming from area code 630 again. Cindy from Bloomington. I finished my first semester of massage therapy school.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Boy, if she needed somebody to do her finals on, I would be happy to donate my services.
We have a volunteer here.
Let's go to Jeff. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Jeff? You're on the air.
Hi, John. I've got two of them. My son, oldest son from Miami University is home, and my youngest son, Eli, from Washington State University is on the plane and en route home.
Have a great holiday, my friend.
Thank you, sir. When you're feeling
in the dumps. Let's go to Jimmy. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Jimmy? You're on the air.
Hello, John. Happy holidays to everybody. My wife, who is a teacher, is going through breast cancer, and she's doing a lot better. God bless her. God bless. Always look
on the bright side of life. How about Sue? You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Sue?
Hi, John. After waiting 15 years, my son Dan is graduating with honors with a BA in secondary education and history from Northeastern University this weekend. So proud.
Happy day, Sue. From you to Catherine, you're on WGN. Catherine, why are you smiling today?
With two boys in the military, this is the first time in 2 years we'll all be together for Christmas.
Wow, what a great... When is everybody going to be together? Christmas night or today? When are you all together?
The oldest comes in on Saturday, and the youngest comes in on Tuesday.
Have a great week, my friend. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
What are we reading at 312-981-7200?
Well, from 630, someone's getting ready to go see their a 1-year-old is going to see Santa. They're taking their granddaughter to see Santa. I want to go.
I don't. Oh, no, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I'm happy for him. Joni, is it Joni or Joanne? Joanne, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, it's Joanne. I work with kindergartners, and they put me in a good mood and in a holiday spirit, and my son's coming home from college today.
I'm glad you've got good news. Thanks for the call. This is Lori. You're on WGN. Lori, what's your bright side?
Hi. My son is graduating from NIU on Sunday, and he has a job lined up, and I couldn't be happier.
That's a beautiful thing when they're paying taxes. I'm glad to hear it. Thanks for the call. Hey, Randy, what's your bright side? You're on the air.
Okay, John, nice to talk to you. 2 weeks ago, you had a promotion on about whom you're going to miss at Christmas time.
Yep.
That won't be able to come in, etc. Well, I won a $100 gift certificate to Lou Malnati for my brother in South Carolina, and he called me yesterday saying that he received the card, and he ordered all his food, and he was very excited and very happy, and I hadn't heard my brother that happy in a long time after losing his wife.
Oh,
so,
wow.
That's my bright side.
How about that? Well, I'm so glad you did that and shared that with us. We never know. You know, we just send the prizes out the window. I'm really glad that went well.
Well, we owe it all to you, and thank you so much.
Merry Christmas. Marsh, what's another texter?
Area code 815. As of today, my awesome son is 57 days clean, and I'm going to surprise him at rehab on Christmas Eve in La Crosse. And that's the
final word. Hey, Jill, this is John. What's your bright side? You're on WGN.
Hi, John. Merry Christmas. My bright side? My daughter-in-law is pregnant with twins.
Wow. So are you just like thrilled, huh?
2 days ago. I don't know. I'm still in shock.
Happy day. Happy day. Read one more, Marsh, before we wrap this up.
All right. Area code 815. I just left the clerk's office, and my child support has just ended. Merry Christmas to me.
Here's what we do on Fridays. We ask you to call in or text in. Tell us some good news in your world while you are smiling, and we smile with you. That is our bright side. What's today's date? Has that been published? Do we know? Today is the... I think that's the last bright side I will be here for before Christmas.
What?
I'll be on the... Well, because I'm taking Friday off before Christmas, so we'll do them afterwards. But thank you for your holiday bright sides. I'm on tomorrow, Saturday, from 10 to noon, back next week, and then we'll eventually take a break for the holiday. Marsh, thanks for coming down again, as always.
Thank you.
I hope I did not insult you, Rokan, on the radio today.
I hope so, too, because my lawyers are always listening, even if I'm not.
For the Holiday Spectacular,
all right.
I read your thing, your little memory of Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I said, you guys will never believe who this is. It's Rokan. And nobody guessed it was Rokan because it was so warm and fuzzy.
Oh, really? Did you make that up?
And I don't think of it as you as a warm and fuzzy. I would think of you, Anna, maybe more that way.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
I don't know, Lou Manfredini more
sure.
that way, but
Lou.
Not Rokan that way.
Yeah.
There was no pain. There was no cries of agony or anguish or nervousness.
No.
It was
no.
a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Was it a medical story? Or what
it was
you
not
could
a
tell
you would,
it if you,
you
want.
You would imagine it were that would be the case. It was about my, as a kid, I grew up in apartment buildings, and I didn't, yeah, I couldn't figure, we didn't have a chimney or fireplace or anything that even resembled anything that Santa could enter the house through except for the front door. And we didn't even have a back door, just a front door. It was a total fire trap. And so my parents explained to me that he hooked up the reindeer and the sleigh to these grommets that are on the outside of the building that the uh-huh. that we used to have window washers would climb up literally the side of the building. They didn't have a scaffolding. They'd hang out
oh
of
my
the window.
Gosh.
Is this in Chicago?
Yeah.
How about that?
And they would that's actually the way a lot of the buildings in the 50s and 60s were built, is that they didn't build them for the big for the big scaffolding.
Mm-hmm.
They did, these guys would like come into your apartment, crawl out the window, and
really?
Hook themselves on to this thing and then clean the window. It was amazing to watch.
Would they just show up sometimes when you're in your bedroom and you just see the guys with their big plungers on your window?
No, they have to come through your house to do it.
And a lot of them would die, I presume. They would just fall to their death?
There was, I believe, a case of that in Chicago, yeah.
Okay, so then what's that have to do with your Christmas story?
So my parents explained to me that they would that Santa would like just hook up to that. To those hooks out there.
The sled was hooked up to the side of the building.
It was hooked up to the side of the building.
Nice.
And then I woke up that morning and they had taken all the cookies and the milk away.
Uh-huh.
And then the window was
Santa
cracked
had.
Right next to
and
the
window
tree.
Was cracked, yeah. Window so was then, cracked, so that you knew that Santa had gone back out the window.
I was
That's
back.
Amazing.
I was, and so I was a believer till I was about 30.
Yeah. So that's how Santa did it back in the day.
Or yeah, well, this would have been 1970s, 60s?
Yeah, this would have been 1971, 70, something like that.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and that was, it was a new era for, it was the Nixon years for Santa. It was a little different for him then. He was always running to or from something. The Vietnam War was raging. He was very busy.
I'm sorry, you're talking about Santa Claus
yeah.
now? What? Mm-hmm. I'm falling.
If there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he had to rush. My point is, in the early 70s, he had to rush. And it was done. Then the next year, I figured
was
it out.
Was he drafted or why?
Yeah, what?
He had a deferment.
I'm still not clear how Richard Nixon got into this Christmas story.
Either.
But anyway, it was a wonderful story. So I'll get out of the way now. Thank you, Ro.
See, if I put
Bye,
that
John.
Into the paragraph, John, people would have guessed it was me.